They should be joining us shortly, so we'll go ahead and start. Chris, do you want to call the roll?
Yes. Roll Senator Kelly, co-chair.
Here.
Senator Pierce.
Me too.
Senator Wilkin.
Here.
Senator Kelly. Pete
Aye.
Kelly. Senator Al Adams. Senator Lauren Lehman, alternate.
Here.
We're waiting on members of the House for caucus. Public members, Jake Lestenkoff. Online from Honolulu, John Hoyt has requested to be excused. George Vakalis in Anchorage, not on yet. Dean Owen in Fairbanks, we got Fairbanks not online yet. Charles Wallace there, and Alan Walker.
Present.
Okay, well that's enough to get started while we're waiting for the House Majority Caucus to finish up. Why don't we begin with introduction of members and guests. Chris, do we have?
Our guests today are going to be making our presentation presentation to us later on in the meeting. That's the real purpose of this information meeting. I'd like to introduce Paul Foose at this time, who will give us a short introduction, and then we'll look forward to the formal presentation from these guys after the conclusion of our business.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm Paul Foose, and I'd like to introduce Michael Keene. He's Transportation Director of Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. They've been working on logistics issues in Anchorage and have taken the lead on this military logistics initiative. I'd like to introduce Kirk McGee. He's Vice President for Real Estate for Siri, and he's also been working on it since they have industrial development properties near the airport. We look forward to making our presentation.
Thanks, Paul. We'll hear from you in a little while. So we have the approval of minutes of the January 31.
The minutes are in your package.
Is there a motion?
Move to adopt.
There is a motion to adopt the minutes. Now, let's see. Do we have a quorum here? We've got 1, 2 on teleconference, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's not quite. We're one shy. We better wait for the House to go ahead and approve the minutes. So why don't we just move on to the activities report from Lieutenant Colonel Chris Nelson, the Staff Director for the Joint Armed Services Committee. Chris.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. Since we had our last meeting in January, we've had significant general officer visits, and we have more scheduled, and we've had some important conferences that members of the committee have participated in. As noted in your agenda, Lieutenant General John Costello, the Commanding General of the United States Army Space and Missile Defense Command, visited Alaska from March 6th to 9th. I know that you, Senator Kelly, and Representative Murkowski were able to join him at a dinner hosted by Governor Hickel in Anchorage. I was able to accompany him on his visit to Fort Greely and again up to Fairbanks. And I know members of the committee from Fairbanks were able to meet with him at a reception that was held by the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce for him that evening. Lieutenant General Costello wanted to view the sites for proposed National Missile Defense deployment in Alaska. At Fort Greely, he got a thorough tour of the facilities. He asked an awful lot of questions. His focus was on quality of life issues for soldiers and their families who would be stationed there. Fort Greely is selected as the deployment site. He was very enthusiastic. The feedback that we've gotten from his trip has been outstanding, and he's been telling people that he had a terrific time in Alaska and that he really liked what he saw. Following the Costello visit, Mr. Vakalis and I represented the committee at the Office of the Secretary of Defense Community Service Community Conference, which deals with BRAC issues. There is a trip report in your file. Rather than go through all the items there, I'll refer you to that. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. This is an annual conference the Secretary of Defense hosts for each of the armed services. And the communities that have suffered base closure, we had a lot of Alaskans attending this conference, folks from Delta Junction and the city of Delta and Fort Greely. Their BRAC people attended, representatives of the Aleut Corporation who are involved in the reuse of the ADAC, former ADAC Naval Air Station attended. We had some very good meetings. The main thing that we are, of course, always looking at is what is the possibility for future BRAC rounds. The Army presentation on BRAC noted that for the very first time, the service chiefs have raised some questions about BRAC. The quotes from those gentlemen are in your package, but the Marine Corps has basically said they don't have any more bases to give up. The Navy has said that they are running out of maneuver space, and if they give up a base, they understand they'll never get it back. The Army has said that it would prefer to wait until their new roles and missions are fully defined and see what their force structure looks like. Nevertheless, within the Department of Defense, they still are saying that we have 22% more base structure than we have current force structure, and so there is that debate going on within the armed forces. The upcoming events that we have at the end of this month, April 24th to 26th, we'll be hosting Lieutenant General Ron Kadish, the commanding general of the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization, and Major General Willie Nance from the Army, who is the project coordinator for National Missile Defense. That's the element that will be coming here to Alaska. These gentlemen are coming to Alaska at the invitation of this committee. You directed that they be invited. We had originally hoped to get them here in Juneau, but they're basically trying to get around and, again, get their feet on the ground on every site that is in Alaska being considered. They're going to be coming in to Anchorage. George Vicalis, one of our members, is coordinating a meeting with Mayor Maystrom and people there to show them facilities in Anchorage. From there, they're going to be going up the next morning to Clear Air Station, viewing that. They're going on to Fairbanks, and they will be speaking. Senator Wilken has been instrumental in making sure that they get to speak to the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce at their regular meeting on Tuesday. From there, they're going to be going down to Fort Greely, viewing the facilities down there. They will have some kind of a public meeting, as yet to be determined, in Delta Junction, and coming up and remaining overnight at Fort Wainwright. On Wednesday, the National Guard is going to be flying them out to Shemya. They're going to go out on a Air National Guard KC-135. They're going to get the chance to see an aerial refueling mission and see how well our Alaska National Guard does on these things. They're going to tour Erickson Air Station at Shemya and then fly back in, and then the next day they're departing for North Dakota, where they'll view the sites there. And I'll make a brief pause while our members from the House take their seats and welcome them to the meeting.
Thank you.
For the record, Representative Murkowski and Representative Harris have arrived. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay. There will be opportunities, depending, of course, we all know that we still may be in session at that time, but there could be some opportunities for members of the committee to accompany General Costa or General Nance and General Kadish on portions of their visit as we become aware of what those opportunities will be. I'll be making those making all of you aware of them to see if any of you would like to accompany them for any or all of the portions of their visit that we have space available for members of the legislature. Finally, we've got the Association of the United States Army Symposium on Space and Missile Defense in California on June 8th and 9th. Again, in your package, there's a flyer on that. The Association of the United States Army sponsored a very excellent meeting last December that John Hoyt represented our committee at. This will be we'll be out of session on that, and so we may have the opportunity to send some people on that. I might mention a couple other items that as we look at, and we're going to be talking under new business on our interim schedule and what it's going to be, but as you know, June is the month where we say goodbye to a lot of the members of the armed forces who are traveling out, moving out into other assignments, and welcome new people to Alaska. And we have received notice that Major General Dean Cash, the commanding general of U.S. Army Alaska, who has been a great friend of our committee, has received a new assignment. He's going back to Washington and has a major new responsibility in developing programs and policies on joint forces. His replacement, Major General Designate Lovelace, who is no stranger to Alaska. He commanded the Division Artillery up here, and the division is coming back to be the new CG. His biography is in your package, and we'll be welcoming him at his change of command ceremony and saying goodbye to General Cash on June 16th. So that would be a date also for interim activities for those members that can attend that change of command and say goodbye and thank General Cash for his hard work for the Army in Alaska, and welcome General Lovelace back to Alaska and congratulate him on his assumption of command. That basically is our activities report, and I think we're prepared now to move on to new business with a quorum.
Chris, I don't want to slow you down, but what's the latest on National Missile Defense?
The latest on national missile defense, and we're going to have an excellent opportunity to get an in-person update from General Nance and General Kadish, the two general officers most involved in this program. But the integrated flight test number 4, which is the next intercept test, has been slipped down to June at this point in time. They believe that they have found the fault and identified the fault for the failure to intercept of the last flight test. As you know, these are integrated flight tests that test each part of the system. And the last flight test, everything worked except the intercept. They believe it came to within about 70 meters of the target, but the infrared sensor failed at the last minute. They believe it was a cooling problem with that sensor, not a problem with the design or system architecture, but simply a mechanical breakdown of one very small part within the system. So they're basically making sure that the next time the thing goes up, everything is going to work. But they have slipped the test until June. It's now felt that the president's decision will be coming in August, and then we'll know at that point in time, number one, if the system will be deployed, number two, if it will be coming to Alaska.
There was a recent story in the newspaper about the costs have gone up since the initial estimate. Do you know anything about that?
The costs have gone up because the scope of the program has gone up is the simplest thing. When the program was initially announced, they envisioned a total of 20 interceptors. They then looked at the emerging threat, and remember that everything on this defensive system is driven by the threat, and they felt that it would be more appropriate to have 100 missile interceptors. So in effect, they went from 20 to 100, and the cost went up. They have also experienced, as the program gets longer and longer, the development costs get greater and greater. There are going to be some more tests on this and that cost. So, yes, the costs have been going up. But, again, the main thing that is driving the increased cost of the program is the fact that the scope of the program has gone up. So that's where we are now.
Okay, thanks. Chris. For the record, we've been joined by Representative Sharon Sista and Representative John Coghill. Why don't we return to approval of minutes? We have a quorum now. Is there a motion?
I move to approve.
There is a motion. Is there objection? Without objection, the minutes of January 31, 2000 are approved. Why don't we go back and check on teleconferences, see who is with us now. Is Janice Nielsen aboard?
Yes, I am.
Janice, where are you today?
I'm in sunny Honolulu.
Oh, really? What's the weather like?
Well, actually, we had a little bit of overcast, but it's probably old on 78.
Okay. Jake, are you still online?
Yes, I am.
Where are you at today?
How's your ass?
Yeah. Okay, sorry, Jake. George, are you aboard? Dean Owen? Chick Wallace. Chris, just for the remembrance of the committee, you might mention who Janice Nielsen is.
Janice, of course, is the legislative liaison person for Headquarters U.S. Army Pacific at Fort Shafter, and we're always glad to have her participate in our meetings.
And she's been up here so much helping us out that she's virtually an honorary Alaskan.
Except today.
She had a choice.
Yeah.
That brings us to new business, and we're just going to discuss the Coast Guard Station Juneau citation.
In your package is a copy of the draft citation, and I think Mr. Walker can speak to that and the tremendous achievement that Coast Guard Station Juneau racked up in the last inspection.
Ellen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to reiterate a few of the things in the proposed citation. I know that everyone is aware of the Coast Guard's contributions statewide and nationwide, but this opportunity, I think, has presented itself, and we should avail ourselves of the opportunity to give them a public commendation. The station had an inspection this past fiscal year and ranked number one in the nation for small boat stations. That's quite an accomplishment, especially when you factor in the adverse conditions which they work under up here. We're not in Honolulu or some of the other climates where they can do easily year-round maintenance on the exterior of their boats. They had a total of 5 discrepancies on this inspection. The team comes out of a headquarters unit back east and inspects all the stations nationwide to maintain a standard of excellence. They had five discrepancies. The average is somewhere around 77, and the previous low all time was 17. So you can see it's a significant reduction. I think in view of all of the fine things that they do, this will not only recognize Station Juneau specifically, but it goes again to recognition of the Coast Guard and the efforts they do, not only nationwide, but especially here in the state of Alaska for safety of life and property and response for environmental problems. And I would recommend that we move it from committee and recommend that it be approved.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
There is a motion. Is there any objection? Without objection, we will get this introduced and passed. Thank you, Alan. We want to discuss Northern Edge Day.
I think first we have a video that Lieutenant General Tom Case has sent down for us. Some of you got the chance to participate and look at Northern Edge, but at this point I think we'd like to show you what Northern Edge looked like this year.
We don't get a lot of this training back at home station. There's a lot of restrictions with fixed-wing aircraft. So this is really good training, and we're enjoying it a lot. Environment, yeah, you may get a little bit embarrassed when someone says, hey, you did this wrong, but at least you're allowed to talk about it.
Officer ready in 2 minutes.
You'll get trained and equipped properly to operate in the cold weather, and it'll do nothing but build confidence and discipline and esprit in your unit to train in an environment like this. Secondly, there's no place where the civilian populace or the state supports the military in a better fashion than right here in Alaska.
It's as close to war as you can get without firing the real missiles than having the real enemy. So yep. It's very, very real for us.
One of the big advantages of Northern Edge is the environment we operate in. In Alaska, it's challenging. In Sitka, this particular community where the Naval Forces are headquartered, you've got a challenging marine area with plenty of ops space to move around, test the limits of our people and equipment in a cold weather environment on a lake.
Janice?
We get great support from the community here.
Is that Janice?
The folks have been,
yep.
We're watching
the
whole
thing.
Yeah, Janice, we're watching a video. It shouldn't be much longer.
It looks great.
Being in an infantry battalion, it seems like more now throughout the world that we're going into humanitarian missions as compared to a combative mission. So but it's good training for especially the infantrymen, which are known as your front line, to get to see this side of the military rule about doing non-combatant. And I guess that's the big shock between somebody that just gets out of school that's trained to kill as somebody that's trained to protect.
Everybody ought to do it. It's a unique experience, that's for sure.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that we make a copy of that available to Gallo so they can show it in its entirety. on the screen. I think it would be a public interest statewide.
Okay, we will do
see
that.
See what Northern Edge was.
Many of us went out to Northern Edge exercise last year, and I think Senator Wilkins had an idea that the committee might want to entertain some of this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Many of us around the table have had the opportunity to view Northern Edge, Brim Frost and Jack Frost before them. Every time we go, we're always impressed by what we see and frankly how much fun it is. So, but the trips are good trips and enjoyable and informative because there's a lot of work that goes into them from the military side, and they really bust their hump to make sure we're welcomed and that our day isn't wasted. As we were flying back last year, us on the HERC were talking about it was too bad more people couldn't come, and it was because we had some brush fires on one side that just didn't let some of the folks out of the building. So the military has entertained the idea that perhaps if the legislature would be able to do it in the initial session of each legislature to shut down the legislature and have what may be termed Northern Edge Day, and that they could focus every other year on hosting us to come up and see Northern Edge, and folks that haven't seen what happens to understand the mission of the military and how we work together, not only inner service, but also between the civilians and the military, and how important Alaska is to the military and vice versa. So to that end, I would hope that we send a letter to from Senator Pierce and Representative Porter, send a letter to the commanders in Alaska asking that we be allowed to do that. They've indicated that they would love to do it. And I think that would be a great day for us. It would provide a lot of benefit to not only the new people, but some folks that need to be reminded how important this mission is.
So what we're talking about kind of is getting a C-130 down here in Juneau and loading up at 0500 or something, flying up to, it'd be outside of Greeley, right?
Eight Eielson first and then out to Greeley.
And then coming back that evening sometime?
Mm-hmm. I think that would be the drill.
Yeah. How many people can you get on board a 130, Chris? Any idea?
Yeah, lots.
I would.
Comfortably.
Yeah, there is a difference.
Sure. Right up front. And I think at the outset, I think it's important for us and certainly you folks as the leadership that we make sure that we understand that the legislator is expected to go. Mm-hmm. And if the legislator can't go, then his or her senior staff person goes. So that we focus in to make sure we're well represented by senior people in the legislature. And it just doesn't become a junket for anyone to just go. I think it's important that we show our best to the military.
Sir, Chris?
The naval component of Northern Edge is important and is becoming more important as the Coast Guard and the Navy play a greater role. I would like us to, in the letter to the commanding officers, say that we are interested in being invited to perhaps split the group even, rather than, I don't want to send all 60 people to both, once on the water and once up in the interior, but it would be useful to perhaps every other year people trade off. Those who've gone to Northern Edge and Delta Greeley go to the waterborne portion the following time, have an opportunity to see that too.
Okay, Chris, why don't you develop a letter from the Armed Services Committee to the presiding officers and outlining what we'd like to see them do.
All right.
We'll give them the information they'll need to address the commanding general here in Alaska, and we'll see if we can't get this rolling next session.
I'll try to submit those to the co-chairs by the end of this week.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, you're welcome. Should we propose to the commanders that the leadership of the legislature be allowed to parachute?
I don't know, Senator Wilkin. I so many of members of the legislature operate without parachutes that
they might become confused.
We could raffle on who's going to be the parachute packers.
All right, that brings John.
Just a member, question for the committee, and just something to think about before you draft the letter. Having all of the legislature in one plane might be very tempting for a mishap, and you might consider either a purposeful mishap or an accidental mishap. May not be something that we want to look into. I mean, maybe something we want to look into.
Okay, that is a consideration. That brings us to the interim meeting schedule. Chris?
There are several proposals that we've looked at for our interim meetings, but as other dates have now become available, and we now know of the change of command on the 16th, and we also have a major opportunity. The Association of the United States Army is hosting retired General Sullivan, the former Chief of Staff of the Army, at its regular meeting. My proposal to the committee for its June meeting, which would be our next regular quarterly meeting, would be that we do it on Monday, June 5th, in at Elmendorf, and do the Corps of Engineers briefings. They have some excellent things they need to share with us on their role in national missile defense, on their work with formerly used defense sites, and the work that the Corps is now doing in rural Alaska, pilot projects for the Denali Commission on Rural Sanitation that the Corps is taking the lead on. And then attend the luncheon with General Sullivan, which will be on Fort Richardson, and then conclude that afternoon at Elmendorf Hospital, the new Air Force regional hospital in Alaska, to visit the TRICARE issues and look at health care issues with the military. Then the next fall quarter meeting we could do September, and the recommendation there would be to do it at Fort Wainwright. That's the last major installation that we have yet to visit. That will give General Lovelace a chance to have been on the ground for a couple of months, and we'll have the chance to meet with him and get his impressions on what his vision for the Army in Alaska is, and the work that the Separate Infantry Brigade is doing up there at Fort Wainwright. We still have a desire to go to Kodiak. That really is going to be dependent on transportation. We need to coordinate that, and that's kind of an ongoing thing. There is going to be a launch at Kodiak. Again, there was supposed to be one in August. They've slipped that one. I'm not sure if the facilities at Kodiak, being very austere, if everybody shows up to view the launch, it kind of blows the gaskets out of everything out there. So I'm not sure if we want to try to coincide with the launch, because I'm not sure that they could accommodate us. But in terms of being able to get transportation out to Kodiak, and then from Kodiak itself out to the launch site, takes a little bit of logistics work, and we can be working on that. But I think that we want to hold Kodiak until we get some assurance that National Missile Defense is going to be able to do one of their target launches out of there, and that's one of the things they're talking about doing. So my recommendation to the committee is that we do Elmendorf in June and Fort Wainwright in September.
Okay, next meeting, Elmendorf, June 5th. Is there any
objection? June 5th, that's Monday, June 5th. That'll do that. And then again, Thursday and Friday of that day is the AUSA conference down in Long Beach. Some members of the committee, you know, we might be able to send some people to that one as well. So that would be our.
Mr. Chairman, Chris, but might I also recommend that at the meeting on the 5th that we also take up the issue of the Citizens Advisory Committee?
Right. We'll have something ready to go on that. One other key date in the summer, the National Association of Installation Developers, the national organization of people concerned with reuse of closed bases, has their annual meeting August 5th through 9th in Monterey. At the last NAID meeting, Mr. Vakalis and Representative Harris represented the committee. Hopefully members of the committee will find it in their schedules to be able again to participate in that organization. NAID does a lot of good work on base reuse. They've also been in the forefront of efforts to privatize utilities and other services on military bases. Mr. Bakalis represented the committee at their meeting in January that dealt with those issues. So that's another thing to keep on the summer schedule, August 5th through 9th.
Okay, next meeting, June 5th. That brings us to, let me just indicate that the co-chair, Eldon Mulder, has arrived from the House Majority Caucus. Eldon, welcome aboard. And that brings us to the special presentation from the Anchorage Military Logistics Initiative Group. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Can we make some room at the end of that table, guys, so that they can...
I think it might be just as easy for us to stand. For the record, my name is Paul Foose, and currently the U.S. Department of Defense is involved in a major analysis of its logistics management systems, and logistics is a huge part of the military. Of their $250 billion annual budget, about $80 billion is logistics.
So we learned a lot about this when the National Defense Transportation Association had its meeting in Anchorage last year and discussed a lot of these issues there. And their initiative is toward more privatization and using private carriers. Well, we all know what's been happening at Anchorage International Airport with the growth of FedEx, UPS, United, Northwest, and some of the other American carriers. So we contacted AEDC and have been working with them and with some of the carriers and some of the C-Links, you know, C-Land and some of the other companies to explore what it might mean both in a contribution to the military mission in terms of war readiness and cost savings, but also what kind of an economic development opportunity it might mean for Alaska. So Michael Keane, the transportation director, is going to talk to you about our trip, where we went, who we met with, and you'll see the materials that were developed. And then Kirk McGee is going to show you some of the things that they've been talking about with Fire Island. And I'll wrap up with a synopsis of what some of the generals and other people that we met with told us about the potential for Anchorage and what the next steps might be. Michael?
Thank you, Paul. Mr. Chairman, members of the Armed Services Committee, and distinguished guests, it's a pleasure to be here today. I've given everyone at the table a packet of information inside of a black bound binder. It's got some information on the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation on it, as well as the Global Distribution Center for the Northern Hemisphere, which is what we feel Alaska has the potential of being. And on the mission that we've been on here, working with the military at the Pentagon, we've had the help of our senior senator from the state, Senator Stevens. We've also kept Senator Murkowski informed of what we were doing, and also Congressman Don Young. The meeting, we've been down to Washington, D.C. Three times in the last two months or so. The last trip, we stopped off in St. Louis and visited Scott Air Force Base and met with General Robertson and his staff to review what our proposal was. And basically, we were trying to show the military, the Pentagon in particular, that we feel Anchorage, Alaska has the potential for being the military's forward mobility hub for the whole Northern Hemisphere. And on this map, it pretty much tells the story. If you look at where Alaska is compared to the rest of the Northern Hemisphere, we could get there quicker from Alaska than any place in the lower 48. And those were the exact words of General Joe Ralston when we first met with him at the Pentagon in February. We've had his support and also on this on this mission, and he's the one that set up the meeting with General Robertson at the Air Mobility Command at Scott Air Force Base. Prior to going down there, we first met with General Thomas Case out of Elmendorf to make sure that when we went to Washington, we were meeting with the right people and so forth, and we're approaching this from the right angle. And the angle that we're approaching this from is that we want Anchorage to be the global military logistics hub based on a private partnership between private industry and the prime source contractors of the military. In other words, there'd be a third-party logistics handler doing all the work in the warehouse, both for shipping, ordering, and parts distribution for the military. And the military has indicated to us that they want this facility to be located somewhere near Anchorage International Airport, not at one of the military bases. And the reason for that is that they want to take advantage of the infrastructure which Anchorage has to provide that global logistics capability. And we do have that in the Anchorage area for the state of Alaska. Again, this project is a joint project and involves the state, our state senators, our United States senators, and our congressmen, as I mentioned, the University of Alaska, the Municipality of Anchorage, the Anchorage International Airport. It's not just one organization going after the military trying to show them what we can do for them up here in Alaska. Everybody that we've met with, and there's a copy of the business cards in the brochure, not in the brochure, but in the packet that I've handed out to you. of all the folks that we've met with, and everybody's been very intrigued with the idea of Alaska being the Northern Hemisphere global logistics hub for the military. I'd like to point out also at this time that in the packet is this DOT logistics strategic plan, which is quite extensive. And I first saw this back at the Council of Logistics Management Seminar in Toronto, Canada, a little over a year and a half ago. And they, we've met with most of the folks that are on that third page on the inside here, and every one of them has been very supportive of looking at the plan that we've presented here. There's also a little card in there, and I personally carry that card. It's got their logistics mission attached to it, and fiscal year 2000 logistics critical success in indicators. I think if you look through that, it's pretty self-explanatory. But it also points out that we could provide the military with what they need for their fighting forces. The other thing that I wanted to point out on with regards to the fact that the military suggested that they wanted the logistics operation out near the airport is that they do not want their men and women in uniform doing logistics work, which other private industry can do. And they want their service personnel being able to do the work that they're trained for. In the booklet that I gave you, mine is blue, but yours is brown and black there. It points out that Anchorage International Airport is the number one cargo landed weight airport in the United States. And there's a reason for that, as Paul mentioned. We're closer to most of the destinations in the Northern Hemisphere than any other one location. Basically, we're 9 hours from 95% of the industrialized world. The Anchorage Economic Development Corporation has been trying to work with the military and the group that went down to Washington and Scott Air Force Base to market the military logistics capability in Anchorage. And now I'd like to turn it over to Kurt McGee, who will talk about the availability of some additional land that's right close to the airport. Kurt?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. What I've got up here is a map of the Anchorage area showing the airport and the industrial land. And we're all aware of the fact that Anchorage Airport cargo traffic is expected to darn near double in the next 20 years. And if we're ever going to take advantage of the logistical type businesses that could come about from that capacity, is where are you going to put it? And if you look in the red and the colors over here of industrial zone land, Anchorage has about 1,000 acres of industrial land now. And it doesn't have any great big chunks unto itself. They're mostly scattered up and down the old and new sewer highway. Well, Siri has come up with the idea of Fire Island out here, where there's 4,000 acres of land that's all basically vacant. Siri has about 3,000 of that. The other 1,000 acres are owned by the federal government themselves. And what we proposed to the airport was to consider Fire Island for additional runway space or development to support logistics. Now, runways on Fire Island, you've got to figure out all the complicated airspace around Anchorage. You've got International, Merrifield, Lake Hood, Helmendorf. And so we've contracted with the firm Landerman Brown to do an airspace study to see just how much could you increase the capacity. If you put a runway on Fire Island and you moved the gas and go traffic out there, you could move a lot of noise out of the Anchorage International Airport further offshore. And to do anything on Fire Island, of course, you got to get there. And what we looked at is crossing the mudflats here. And we looked at it differently, and we had Dennis Nottingham of Bradovich, Nottingham, and Drage relook at this idea. Where before they looked at trucking gravel in from the Mat Valley to build a causeway, what he came up with was a suction dredge idea to essentially bring material from the floor of the inlet and build your causeway that way. Put a shallow slope on it so it doesn't even need to be armor rock. And the estimate that we've come up with was $30 million to build that causeway using material from the inlet itself. I put a put an aerial picture on your packet there. And what that shows was several runway configurations, and there was nothing magical about that. We just wanted to see a 12,000-foot runway on the island. How would they fit out there? Also, it shows a route of a causeway across the mud flats, and it shows how would you get there from the main part of town. And what we've shown here is A, Raspberry Road, and B, going underneath a tunnel underneath the existing north-south. And from what I understand, the airport, through Stephen's office, has put in a request for the first phase of that to do the engineering for a tunnel underneath the north-south, which could be used for access to Fire Island as well as just access to the west side of the airport for any kind of cargo operations that would ever happen over there. Where we're at now is we expect to get this airspace study back in about 45 days, and that'll tell us a lot more about whether runways would work on Fire Island. We've started a little bit of the scoping as far as what kind of impact statement, what are kind of the issues we have to address to building a causeway. And of course, the things you know that come up is what happens to erosion, accretion, what happens with beluga whales out here, since beluga whales have been put on a list of depleted. Any fish come up through here, how would it affect fish, salmon migration, as well as salmon fry. And what you have out here, if you've flown into Anchorage, of course, at low tide, you know it's all exposed. Well, it's exposed about 40% of the time. And I don't believe we're going to come up with a lot of fish migration, and the set net sites currently are all on this side of the island towards the deeper water. Deeper water on this side, the Fire Island is also looked at one time for a port out here, but I believe it was dropped because at that time they didn't think that you could get out to the island in an economical fashion. So we're going to have to look at the environmental aspects of this before we do an EIS to get a causeway out there. And that could obviously take several years to go through an EIS process. But for Anchorage, again, if the logistical aspects for putting companies in Anchorage to work on logistics, Fire Island offers 4,000 acres of land, pretty close proximity to the airport. And that's why we're promoting that idea.
Lauren? A couple questions, Kirk. One is on the alignment of the proposed north-south. In the packet someplace, I saw a slightly different alignment that made perhaps better use of the land part of Fire Island than this. Are they just two different options?
Yeah.
And right now there's...
This one, I believe, was trying to line up directly with the exact alignment of the 1331 at International now. But what our study is going to tell us is just how should that be aligned.
Okay.
How does that affect, you know, departing aircraft from Fire Island versus here versus traffic coming in from Elmendorf?
The other question is could the, you know, at least some revised proposal for a port on the north side of the island, could that be integrated with the new runways out there? I mean, if you're going to end up putting a causeway across and accessing it, it seems to me that it may make sense to have a multiple use out there. And is that something that would be possible?
Absolutely, that could make sense. But the only caveat would be is obviously you wouldn't want to put your port directly underneath the approach into the runway because
right.
of the mast heights and that. But you know, yeah, that
right.
makes some sense.
Yeah, I'll make, and if you could please find this document. It starts out Washington, D.C. It's about 12 pages here, Xeroxed in your packet. It starts out with the mission statement that we went and met when we made requested the meetings with the Pentagon. And then pages 2 through 5, that's where you'll find the business cards of everybody that we met with. And I think maybe the lowest ranked person that we met with was a 2-star general. So we got in to see the very top policymakers. Well, what did those people tell us? And that's what I'm going to give you a synopsis of right now. Although the military obviously has a global mission, in terms of their logistics, they've always divided the world into two pieces. They grew up with a Mercator mentality like all the rest of us did. And so the Asian command is supplied more from the West Coast, the European command more from the East Coast. But where you look at where you could consolidate those and do it more efficiently and keep it on U.S. soil, it's very important that it be on U.S. soil for them, then Alaska makes the most obvious sense in terms of being able to get to several theaters
at the same time, where you could maybe reduce some of the redundant supplies that you have on the east and the west coast. Well, the other thing that they looked at, and we, as Michael pointed out, you've got more airlift capacity there, and it's the number one air cargo port. It's 2 billion pounds a year more than Memphis, and LAX and Miami International are way down the list from that. So they really liked it, that because you can take advantage of that private airlift. Some of the overseas locations, there's political risk to them. Some of them have been shut down. They may have more of them shut down. They're concerned in some areas, like in Korea, of CBR, chemical, biological, radiological contamination of the equipment there that may make it unusable on the site. Some of their supplies are on Navy ships that just float around. And but the problem they have is getting the last mile to the actual military location from the ship to the shore to supply the troops. And the other thing is that some of the ships are so full that when they get new materials, what do they do with the old materials? So the Admiral Amaro from the Navy was very interested in the idea of a port that could also supply, and where he could unload some materials and bring some other materials on. He was very interested in that. And so they were also interested in the seaport idea and of the idea of a sea air link. And how that would work is that equipment would be brought by sea to Alaska and warehoused in a former mobility station and then delivered by air for just-in-time delivery. That's more efficient to bring it on the water, and if you don't need it right then, or if it's longer supply lines, some of our sea connections, we've got very good service now from Alaska to Asia, primarily built around the fish industry, but all those shipping, containerized shipping routes do exist and are highly efficient. Many of the current base depots that they have are artifacts and political artifacts of the old system. When it was the military doing all the shipping and on their own airplanes, you could put these bases everywhere, anywhere, and whoever happened to be the senator chairman of appropriations at the time had a good shot at having them located there. Well, none of them are near any of the modern transportation hubs anywhere. The only one is right now is in Memphis, and that was a military site that was turned over completely to FedEx, and they operate it for packages of less than 150 pounds, electronic components and things like that. So that part of the system is already in place. But as General Ralston pointed out, if you had it in Anchorage, you'd all be a day ahead on delivery, even from Memphis. The other thing is that maintenance. Original equipment manufacturers, this equipment has to be maintained and it has to be recalibrated. A lot of it's modular, flight navigation systems, electronic weapons components. You pull the whole module out and put a new one in, send it back for recalibration, testing, and maintenance. So that's another thing, aspect of it. They said that although it made common sense to them that these could be savings for them, they said that we really needed to do an analysis of that. And they pointed us towards several contractors that they used that would have credibility with them. We did develop a scope of work for that analysis, and it is included, it's on page 10 of your document here, is the scope of work for the business, presenting the business case. We have a quotation for doing this study we just recently received. It's for $200,000. Price Waterhouse could do the analysis, and it would take them about 2 months to do it. The reason it's important that this be done quickly is because you got the quadrennial defense review. Every 4 years, the military reviews all of its systems, and that's starting in October. So we're trying to put that together before to be in time for the quadrennial defense review. And although I know that we're very late in the legislative session, AEDC has written just today a letter requesting that consideration be given for funding of this study for $200,000. In the capital budget, and I know, as I said, we're very late in the session, but we wanted to present this opportunity to you, and if we can prove that there's a good business case here, then I think that there's a very strong opportunity for military logistics at Anchorage International Airport. We'll be glad to take any questions.
Senator Murkowski. Representative Murkowski.
Thank you. Paul, in asking for the capital request, is there any opportunity or possibility that a portion of those monies would be available from Department of Defense?
We asked them, and we're just so late in the year that they don't have, you know, we talked to Senator Stevens about an appropriation for next year, which would have been available. unfortunately, we're just too late in the year for waiting for a federal appropriation. We'll miss the quadrennial defense review. However, they have reviewed the scope of work, and we've asked one of them, either Defense Logistics Agency or U.S. Transportation Command, to be the sponsor of it, to at least say we'll oversee it so that it's seen as a military study and not as a cheerleading exercise on our part that, well, you paid for the study and you got what you paid for. So they have agreed, over, you know, over taking a look at the scope of work so that it would, you know, that they would agree on what questions were being asked.
Well, a little bit more about this study, and this is the first I've heard of a request being made, and you're right, it is off the lake. Who would do the study?
Price Waterhouse is the company that was the most responsive and gave us a quotation, and the request would be that...
Us is who?
The AEDC, okay. The Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. So if you were to do it, it would be a grant to AEDC for the specific purpose of doing this study.
And how do you avoid the taint of you choosing your own consultant type scenario?
Because these consultants were given to us by the Department of Defense, by Major General Higginbotham, who is the general in charge of defense for the United States Marine Corps, and he's in the Joint Chiefs Office. These were direct referrals from them.
Marines, so Senator Kelly. Okay, if a Marine wanted it, it must be good.
Representative Murkowski.
On this quadrennial defense review, then, am I understanding you correctly in saying that if you don't get in now, it's not even a subject of conversation for 4 years?
It'll be much more difficult for us to put it in. This is a systems-wide review that's done every 4 years, and if we can get in on that, they told us that we would be much further ahead than if we were trying to interject ourselves at various points along the line.
But so it still is possible to do it later without getting in. I'm just
we'll
thinking
do our
worst
very
case scenario, if the monies aren't there.
We'll do our very best to get in at any point that we can. It would just be more efficient, and we'd have a higher chance of success if we were had a study completed before the quadrennial defense review.
Mr. Chairman, Paul, what entities would be out there arguing against the development of this new logistics center? And in other words, who are you taking away from?
Well, it would be the existing depots that are in Georgia and Oklahoma and, you know, these other places that have been placed there would be concerned about this. But you don't really, and the Defense Department wants to consolidate and do another round of BRAC on depots. But this kind of leapfrogs over the whole thing, because you're going to this private sector contracting. So that's why it's not creating a new military base, a new military depot. This really is a private sector partnership utilizing the existing airlift capacity that we have and having them actually handle and build the warehouses.
Did Paul, I know you mentioned it, or someone did, the volume logistics. When you mention logistics, you kind of, you get a glazed look over most people's eyes, because they don't necessarily understand the volume of the support apparatus that goes along with sending troops to combat areas. Do you have any idea what kind of volume, again, could be utilized or realized?
Well, the total is $80 billion a year. It's a third of the defense budget, and a lot of it is even just household items. But right now in Anchorage, if you'd like to look at, this system is working right now on page 12, you'll see, and again, Major General Higginbotham gave us this information of what products are now being supplied through Anchorage and which contractors are doing it, and it's primarily food and medical supplies right now, and the total is about $23 million a year that's being brought in by sea, shipped out by air for just-in-time deliveries.
Senator Pierce, you got a question?
Yes, thank you. For the grant proposal and the work that's going forward, and I applaud AEDC and Siri for bringing forth your ideas, how is the Department of Transportation state, since we own and operate the Anchorage International Airport, how are they involved, at what levels, or are they?
Senator Pierce, through the chair, they've been involved at every level of this. We briefed them many times on this, and they see a real opportunity here. They did put forward the proposal to Senator Stevens for the tunnel under the north-south runway, which would need to be done to facilitate this. But even if nothing else happens, that needs to be done for the airport. And so you can use International Airport Road as access and take the traffic off of Raspberry and Northern Lights, which is a big subject of concern for the communities. In terms of the Fire Island development, we did propose, and the airport accepted that alternative as a plan option, and it is formally in the planning effort now that they're underway as the from the airport. And we had the support of some of the community councils and the mayor for that, for including that. They have been very cooperative in this whole effort, and we've also briefed Commissioner Perkins on a regular basis.
If I could just follow up, more statement than a question. I support expanding logistics in Anchorage at the airport for the military. I think it's a great idea. But I don't support it if it's going to mean additional noise that isn't abated in some manner by DOT and the airport. And they're going to have to deal with the noise problems that they already have. And I'm hoping that these discussions will perhaps move them forward toward making some decisions that aren't easy and cost money no matter what direction they go. They're going to have to deal with the noise problem in Anchorage, and I think the Siri idea would get them a long way. If I could just ask, are the Lynx folks, Williams Lynx, I guess it's not fair to just ask about them. All of the cargo carriers that have already spent significant amounts of money to build cargo facilities on the present side, that being UPS, FedEx, certainly Lynx, Williams, and whomever else. How are they involved, and are they supportive of looking at the additional off-site or adjacent site moves in the future?
Senator Pierce, through the chair, we briefed all of them. There was the very first meeting we ever had on this, was to get FedEx, UPS, United, and Northwest in the same room to discuss this. And if they'd have said it was completely crazy, it would have never taken another step. But they didn't. And what they said, although it'd be unlikely that they would move, that they would support additional lands being available just because of the congestion they see and the impacts on the communities. And that if they had a tunnel under the north-south runway, that it's not too far to combine operations and move things. They've got trucks that are low boys that can take stacks of these totes that they use to put in their aircraft. And if they had the tunnel under the north-south runway, they could combine those and make, even if landings were taking place on Fire Island or other warehousing or logistics center was there, it's not far enough away that it would be a problem if you had the tunnel under the north-south runway.
And a causeway. So they're not precluded. While you wouldn't bring planes back and forth across the causeway, they wouldn't be precluded from using the Fire Island for takeoffs and landings and servicing the jets long distance.
That's correct. Or the gas and go, the transient, put all of them out there and get all that noise off. They don't need so much facilities. They're doing tail-to-tail transfers and things like that. But if they did need to, you could just drive it across.
What would they do with the landing fee revenue for the airport?
Well, Siri's position has been that these airports should be part of the Anchorage International Airport system. And whether that's under DOT or under a port authority or whatever, you can't have two airports. They have to operate as one. And Siri's indicated its commitment to dedicate those lands for the runways to the airport system if airport goes in there.
Does Siri own Fire Island?
Siri owns 3,200 acres of Fire Island. And if I can take this down, the other remaining 1,000 acres are owned by the federal government. And these chunks out here and this here is the airport. Owned by FAA, and their VOR station is here. This is owned by the Coast Guard here. This is about 250 acres, which is the potential port site, and this 750 acres is FAA. So it may be, they aren't development agencies. Perhaps it's more appropriate for the state or the municipality to own some of those properties. There is the range stations here the Marine pilots use to make the turn at the shoal, so you got to deal with that. And eventually they plan on moving the VOR, FAA does, as they move into more microwave and GPS landing systems. But right now it's needed.
It would be possible to bring a Blue Water ship into Fire Island and transfer directly from large aircraft to a ship for transshipment?
Yes, sir. The depth off of the northeast point of Fire Island is 65 feet of depth. And that's a self-scouring channel out there. are some other issues in terms of current navigation and things like that, and we're asking the marine pilots in the area to give us a clearer definition of what they feel the navigation issues are.
Well, that's a clear advantage that most communities don't have. You know, an ocean link to a major airport.
Admiral Amaral from the Navy was extremely excited about this. He just kept looking and looking and looking at that paper when we met with him, because he saw it was a possible solution to some of the logistics issues he was dealing with.
Chris, did you want to comment on the quadrennial defense review?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Senator Kelly, the quadrennial defense review is coming up, and it's one of the institutions that has taken place. It started back when Defense Secretary Les Aspin, when he took office for the first time, asked the military to conduct a thorough review. It was called the bottom-up review, to look at all their functions and see how they related back and forth. It was such a success in getting the services to talk to one another and to really stand back and take a look at what they were doing and ask how they could do it better, that it's become institutionalized and they've decided to do it every 4 years, hence the name Quadrennial Defense Review. Defense Secretary Perry institutionalized it. We've gone through one Quadrennial Defense Review, or QDR, and as they pointed out, we are now coming up on the next Quadrennial Defense Review, and it's now one of the major management tools within the Department of Defense and within the Armed Services to, again, take a thorough evaluation of what they're doing and see what they're doing and ask how they can do things better.
Any further questions? Any further questions of Paul Fuse or his gang? Paul, thank you very much for the presentation, fellas. I presume you sent letters to the presiding officers of finance chairs. What did you do, Paul?
Yes, sir, we did, and those were just delivered today.
Okay.
I'm sorry for the lateness, but we just didn't have access to the information before this time.
Senator Pierce.
Above and beyond the capital appropriation request, is there anything that this committee could do to help forward the activities of everybody working on finding
well,
a way to expand?
You perhaps it might be appropriate for the committee to send a letter of support, and we could give you the names of the people who are working on that. I mean, one thing that really helps Alaska is Alaska is famous for being friendly to its military forces. They look at this as one of the most welcoming jurisdictions that they operate in anywhere in the world. So I think that that could help, and we certainly will do our best to keep you informed as progress moves along with this. And of course our congressional delegation is going to be important in all of this. And if I could kind of say what we felt Senator Stevens, where he was coming from on this, he's certainly not going to use his position to push the military into something that is less efficient for them. However, if we can prove that it's more efficient in war readiness and cost savings, then he'll do his best to keep other people from politically blocking those efficiencies from taking place, which I think is a great position for him to be taking.
Senator Wilkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Keene.
Yes, you have.
Not really related to this, but I'd be interested, as long as you're here. The new generation, the 3XX and the 7XX generation of aircraft, when you look up 20 or 30 years, what does it mean to Alaska as far as landings and takeoffs in Anchorage?
I have to stand up here so you're closer to the microphone.
Well, they, from a passenger standpoint, those new airplanes are going to bypass Anchorage if they're flying someplace with a load of passengers. But from a cargo standpoint, the aircraft is going to get the best utilization of the aircraft. You're going to fill it up with cargo, take less fuel, and make a pit stop in Anchorage and perhaps do some cargo transfer. And that's what we're hoping will happen as years go by. And I think the noise problems and some of those things the airport is working on now, and they can be abated to the point where hopefully we can work together with the community with to everyone's satisfaction. But I think that as long as we have are able to put cargo on the airplane and make a stop someplace, you're going to be getting better utilization from the aircraft if you could fill it up with cargo and not just take a partial load of cargo to go nonstop from one destination to another. For example, from Hong Kong to New York, if you were to make that with a full cargo airplane, you would probably have to go with a third less cargo and more fuel to make that all the way. And if you stop in Anchorage, you can have a full load of cargo in Anchorage, perhaps do some cargo transfer, and then go on to New York with it, still with a full load of cargo.
So it shouldn't make us too nervous. It'll just be an evolution of the market.
I believe that that's what it'll be. And my whole career has been in the airline industry prior to joining the AETC. So I've about 37 years in that industry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Further questions? Any further business to come before the committee? Is there any objection on the committee to having Chris develop a letter to the presiding officer telling him that we think it's a serious effort that should be looked at carefully? Okay, Chris, if you'll do that, please, looking at that appropriation request. And other than that, Eldon?
I haven't got anything, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Eldon's agreed to run the next meeting, which will be on June 5th at Elmendorf. And until then, we join our services at the adjournment.